I'm Gab. He's Don.
Hey.
Jewel's still away in Australia at the Women's World Cup. Blue skies over West London. Not sure what the skies are like over North London because this is breaking news as we record this this Gab and Jewel show. Don, Spurs have accepted a bid from Bayern Munich. Reports say that the bid is in excess of 100 million. Were early reports that Bayern were preparing a bid that could be worth up to 110 million. These are euros now, not pounds, from what we understand.
Wow.
We knew it was going to happen at some point that Levy was going to accept. Now it seems to me like it's down to Harry Kane.
It's always been down to Harry Kane. This is obviously breaking news, and it's
It's not always been down to Harry Kane.
He
didn't go to Man City, did he?
It has always been down to the player because they can accept £100 million if they want Tottenham, and Harry Kane can say, "No, I am not going. Thank you very much." Therefore, it's always down to the player.
Put differently, though, it's a two-way street because if Harry Kane wants to leave and Tottenham don't accept the offer, then Harry Kane has to stay.
Okay, right? Well, let's meet somewhere not in the middle. I would say it's 80% in Harry Kane's favour to 20 into Tottenham's because £100 million that they've accepted has obviously shifted the needle because I never thought this was going to be the move for Harry Kane. It's obviously the move for Tottenham because they need to get in as much money as possible before you lose them on a free. So from Daniel Levy and the club's point of view, and also not selling to an English club, makes absolute sense. You get top dollar from Bayern Munich for Harry Kane, but now it's on the player. How much do you want to go to Bayern, or how much do you want to see your contract run down to a free and bring Bayern, Barca, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Man City, Man United all to the table next summer? But this news has obviously shifted it a bit.
Now, we obviously don't know what Harry Kane's stance. I mean, we are literally recording this in real time, news that the offer's been accepted. Normally, what happens in these situations is the club, the buying club, reach some sort of informal agreement with the player and his entourage, saying like, hey, if we can do a deal with Spurs, if we were to offer you 4 years, blah, 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 at this much, would you be interested?
Yes.
And the reason they do
this... used to be called tapping up back
used to
day.
Be illegal because of stupid
never
rules made
been
by
illegal.
Stupid people.
I've had that phone call a million times.
I don't know,
because the bid never goes in.
Of course.
When you've had the conversation with the player and the player gives you an indication, yeah, if it's accepted, yes, I would come, or no, I wouldn't, and then the bid doesn't go in.
Because otherwise they're not going to waste their time.
That's what I mean.
Right? But it was technically illegal, and there were teams that have been reported and even punished for it. Tapping up, as it's known in this country, tampering, as it's known across the pond. So if Bayern go through with this, is it safe to assume that they have spoken to Harry Kane, his family members,
allegedly?
And Harry Kane? Well,
I would imagine so.
And that he's agreed in principle.
Yeah. I would imagine the conversation has been something like from Bayern to Harry Kane's camp. If we submit the bid and it's accepted, would you then come? And Harry Kane at some point, I would imagine, or his camp has said, yes, we would be open to the idea. So therefore the bid goes in and then they start talking the money.
I think it's more than open to the idea for Bayern to move. Now this, I'm speculating here, but just from what I know of how transfers work, if they continue to pursue this bid so aggressively, it's more than, then we can have a conversation if Levy accepts the bid.
Yeah.
I think, because they'd be doing Kane a disservice, they'd be doing Spurs a disservice, they'd be wasting Bayern's time.
Yeah.
I think it would have gone further. I think it would have said, okay, what sort of numbers are we talking? What is the plan for next season?
Where Bayern, I think, has been really poor in this is I think their stance on trying to negotiate has been really poor. Because this time last week when they put a lesser bid in, they said, that's our final offer. Well, it's not your final offer because you've just come back in and offered 100.
Yeah, but anybody who's negotiations, bought a house or a car...
You don't say final offer. It makes you look a little bit silly because therefore, whatever bid you come in, Tottenham can say, well, it's not really a final offer, is it? So your negotiating skills have been a
Bayern
bit off.
Bayern could care less if one Don Hutchinson think they look silly if they end up with
Well, don't
Harry
say
Kane.
It's your final offer then.
But, are we relatively confident that Kane has...
I am not, Gab. I am not, because I've always maintained my stance from the player's point of view that I wouldn't rush into a move now.
So you would move as a free agent. That would be the rational
thing. That's what I would do, because you can have the conversation. Listen, it's one of them where I think Bayern Munich's best chance of getting Harry Kane is this window. Because if you leave it another 12 months, and as I said, you bring Barca, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Man United, Man City all to the table.
Enough with the Barca, please. But
okay, yeah. But Bayern are not in the conversation then. Because English players, from what I've known over my 30, 40 years spending time in the game over here, when they think about moving abroad, Barca and Real Madrid are the two biggest clubs that they think about going to. Right. I can't think of many English players, Gab,
who say that, they dream of playing for...
No, who have actually moved to Bayern. Over the last 30, 40 years, Musiala's different. He's now German.
Yeah.
I think there's one young boy that was at Chelsea that's now at Bayern. The name escapes me. But if you look back at 20,
that's
30...
Musiala.
Huh?
That's Musiala.
No, there was another boy, I think, went from Chelsea. But I think if you look at the last 30, 40 years, no one's went from English player to Bayern. So it's not a massive draw for them.
Now, people point out that Kevin Keegan went to Hamburg and did rather well out of it, but of course, that was in the 1970s, and it's not Bayern. And, we're dating ourselves when we bring that up. All right, Don, we've talked about how, from Kane's perspective, if you were advising Kane and you have some familiarity with the Kane camp, you would say, Harry,
wait
a season. Pick your options next summer, right? He's made enough money, whatever. Mm-hmm. The counter argument to that might also be, if people know it's your final season and you're moving on, sometimes it can be kind of hard to, handle that goodbye. Maybe some resentment from fans. Well, you could have left us with a transfer.
Scored four goals a couple of days ago in a preseason game.
Yeah, scored 30 goals last year. Exactly. But whatever. But you know how supporters are. And it can be emotional and painful. Yeah. And if you're there, sometimes it's best to make a clean break, right? So I can see the counter argument to it from a purely footballing aspect. I'm 100% with you. From Kane's perspective, it might have made sense to wait another season, right?
Yeah.
And have more options out there. From Tottenham's perspective, this is a no-brainer.
No.
To get that kind of fee for a guy with a year left on his contract.
Correct.
And on those wages.
Correct.
Is tremendous. And I kind of feel, and Ange may feel differently, I have the in-house replacement right there.
In
Richarlison. Now, you can make a face about Richarlison.
I'm not making the face about Richarlison. You can't compare Richarlison to Harry Kane.
No. I'm not saying he's going to do the same thing, right? But you need a centre forward.
You said in-house
replacement. No, I have an in-house replacement. I have another guy who is experienced, who scored goals in the Premier League, who I spent a lot of money on. I can put together an attack of Son, Richarlison, Kulusevski, some of the other guys. We're going to talk about how they've been linked with Gift Orban, for example. I can make it work. It's not like now.
Make it work for what?
Well, I can make it work.
Title challenge, top four, top seven.
I think it's got to be top four after the season they had last year.
They ain't
getting
top four.
You can make it work for this team to progress with a new manager. That's what I'm talking about.
They might not even get top four with Harry Kane there. Right. Never mind Kane.
No, but that has to be the goal this season, right? You're not going to go into the season.
It's the goal, but it's unrealistic.
That's fine. But you can make it work in your pursuit of top four. What I'm driving at is if Richarlison weren't there. And Son weren't there, because Son can also play through the middle, of course. And you've got some flexibility there, what you could do with those two guys. They are they are pretty versatile
good players.
You would be in a situation where you're like, oh, look, Harry Kane's gone. We've got 3 weeks left of the transfer window. I'm going to go and try to sign somebody with 100 million odd in my pocket. And so everybody's prices are going to go up. Now they're in that situation where instead of shopping for an A-list striker to replace Kane, they can shop in a different segment of the market. Maybe it's a guy who does a job. Maybe it's a younger player.
Well, the younger player, in my opinion, who is the no-brainer, is Evan Ferguson at Brighton. I see him. He cost an awful lot of money, by the way.
Right.
But I see him potentially being an unbelievable striker. I know guys that have worked with him. Worked with him from 18s to 19s level, and they said one of the most complete youngsters we've seen and coached for quite a while. I think for Tottenham, if they could get him out of Brighton, I think he's the one where you can spend 10 years on him.
Right. My attitude is if Hoyland, who I think compares to Ferguson in some ways, just in terms of age and the hype around him, I think he's a year older or 2 years older.
Yeah.
If Hoyland sets United back 75, 85 million.
Yeah.
Ferguson's going to cost you more than that. And so at that point, that's all the Kane money gone.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Therein lies the problem about Harry Kane moving on, and whatever player at any team you bid for, let's say it is Ferguson, they go, well, you've got 100 million to spend. We'll have 75 of that, please.
Right. So that's why it's probably better to shop, I think, in another segment of the market, in somebody cheaper.
But football's a cruel world, though. So if you went to, so say, a different market and a lesser standard of player for the potential, and at the end of the season, we're all sitting here and fans are sitting here and going, hang on a minute, we sold Harry Kane 30 goals a season and we got player A in that cost about 25 million quid and he scored 5 goals. How does that help us get top 4?
Well, because Rome's not built in a day. You have a new manager you have a project.
Yeah, but fans don't
and
see
Postecoglou
it
has coached as many Premier League games right now for Tottenham as you have, right? Which is zero.
It doesn't mean his opinion's better than mine or mine's better than his.
No. But what it means is you have to give it time to develop. You have to see what he can do.
I get that.
Can Kulusevski improve? Can Richarlison live up to his transfer fee that you paid a year ago?
So would the economics not be the conversation between Daniel Levy and Ange Postecoglou if we kept Harry Kane? Right, and we let him go for free. The numbers, if we did get then top four, what's Champions League money these days? 60, 70?
It depends how far you get. But yeah, 60 is probably...
Economics not work by keeping him?
I would argue probably not, because it's not like you're guaranteed Champions League even with Harry Kane, right? So
we go full circle back to the conversation with Richarlison. No,
if you want to look at it from a probability situation... No, but then again, you have Postecoglou, whereas, you know, last year you had 3 different managers and it didn't work out well and you fell apart late in the season, right? Yeah. I mean, let's not forget, under Conte, at some point, they were in the top 4 conversation. They were in the top 4 conversation for much of the season. So you can make a point that maybe they're not quite as bad as...
But Jose's told us, and Antonio Conte's told us.
Yeah, again...
It's not on us. This is on the group of players. So just because you bring Postecoglou in, who's a very exciting front-footed manager... A little bit different than Jose and Antonio Conte, maybe, but he's still got that group of players to work with who, when it comes to the crunch, are not good enough.
We'll see what they can do with that. I'm always, you know,
it's not on the manager. I'm saying the players. I'm not.
Right, but
I'm
we'll
not
see if the players behave differently. Even assuming what Conte and those guys and Mourinho.
Oh, I know players at Tottenham when Antonio Conte come in and he ran them hard. I know players at Tottenham went, he's unbelievable. We absolutely love him.
Yeah, they
because
love
you
him,
love managers
like
until you fall out with them.
I think with a fit Romero, with a fit Bentancur, Van de Ven coming in, you know, I don't think that Spurs are necessarily... If Ange can do what Spurs hope he can do, I don't think they're necessarily as far away as people think. Also because, let's not forget, you have a situation where at the very top, you know, Arsenal and City look pretty settled and had great seasons last year, right? Mm-hmm. But Liverpool have a ton of question marks. Manchester United have a ton of question marks. Chelsea, let's not even get started. Newcastle and Villa, weirdly, are the teams who are pushing. So you could argue they're coming behind you.
Brighton.
Potentially Brighton, too. I mean, there are other teams. But you're in this situation where if you're Spurs, you're in that mix. And I can go pear-shaped and you finish ninth. Or there could be a gap behind the front, too.
I'm just with that conversation you're having with me here, and you're selling it to me, and you're selling it to me well, I would still have more hope of Tottenham getting top four with Harry Kane there.
Of course, obviously, but the question
but
is...
But I totally understand, by the way, Levy saying we want 100.
Right, and where would they be 12 months from now without Harry Kane and without the 100 million, right? Because that's the flip side of it. Let's talk about Bayern. I find this interesting, the Harry Kane thing. So obviously, I think there's almost been like a, for a club that likes to plan and everything, a bit of an emotional reaction here, right? So they lose Lewandowski. They're like, yeah, we don't need a center forward. Look, Sadio Mane, blah, blah, blah.
Good German.
We've got
a bit of German.
But we've got, you know, Matthijs Tel is going to be really good. And then we see what happens last year. And I personally, I'm on the record, I'm going to stick with this. I think in a different condition at the club, maybe with a different manager or whatever, I think it could have worked, Mane through the middle. I think it could have worked. You know, obviously, if he's not punching teammates, that would help too. but, you know, it's not absurd that it couldn't have worked.
No.
Now you're deciding, no, we need a center forward. We need a goal guarantee type guy. Let's bring in Harry Kane. Now, what I wanted to ask you, though, is... This is a team which has an exceptional attacking midfielder and Jamal Musiala.
Unbelievable.
Thomas Muller, who was an exceptional, you know, a team icon, a guy who's difficult to leave out of the
side. And they're still waiting for Leroy Sané to fire.
No, but I just want to stick on
the quality.
Sané, Coleman, Gnabry. You have your wingers, right? Yeah. This issue was raised to me is, how is Harry Kane going to play over there? Because if you have the attacking midfielders, which they didn't have at Spurs, the Harry Kane drop deep and then, you know, hit that ball for Son to run onto, you don't want to see that at Bayern, right? You almost would rather Kane just stayed in and around the area so he can pick up the crosses, because if he starts dropping off, he gets in the way of Musiala and Muller, potentially, right? How do you play that?
I think it's very easy because he's got a football IQ and he's very intelligent in how he plays the game, Harry Kane. There'll be times where he plays between the width of the 18-yard box and gets his goals in the 18-yard box. But I think there's times when you do come short. If you think Firmino at Liverpool and you think Harry Kane at Tottenham, when he comes short as a midfield player myself, that's the dream. Because Harry Kane comes short, someone links the play, third man running, Musiala in the box. So you attack a midfield players, in my opinion, working with Harry Kane, their numbers or their chances should be a lot greater because you're working with a guy that's an incredible team player. If you think of when Firmino played for Liverpool, he wasn't necessarily prolific, but Mane was and Salah was because of the brains of Firmino.
I understand that, but
I think that's what Harry Kane does to Bayern.
What does Kane do? Because it's interesting you say that, because there's two ways to do this, right? So I've spoken to people, ex-footballers, who said, no, well, if Kane goes, you know, the whole Kane dropping off thing, which he did exceptionally well, he did it by necessity. He did it because...
I think he's always really done it, though, Gab, hasn't he?
I'm not sure he did early in his career.
When you're young...
I don't mean when he's young. I mean right up when he was 25, 26, 27. I think this is something that we've seen this side of his game more and more in the last four years.
Don't expect any different, because that's the player that Bayern want to sign. Why would you check? Why would you spend £100 million on a player when you know what they can do and what they have done, to then potentially change him and say, right, forget everything you've done about coming short. We now want you to be a predator, 18-yard box player. Well, it's not really his game. He does everything at a 9 out of 10.
He can do a lot of things well, but he...
Why wouldn't you want to link with Coman? Why wouldn't you want to link with Leroy Sané? Why wouldn't you want to link with Musiala? Well,
one potential explanation...
Lewandowski did it.
Might be that... No. Okay, don't give me this. Lewandowski did it. Lewandowski didn't play right?
This is my gripe with fans. It's like they want a definition of the player. Why can't you let the player do what he does in 90 minutes? So there might be a 5 seconds where he comes short. There might be a 10 seconds he goes in behind.
But I think there's a lot of data and analytics that suggest that when Lewandowski, who, by the way, was tremendous at pressing, and when he was at Bayern, he was not dropping into the positions that Kane dropped into at Spurs. Yeah. Many different reasons.
That's fine.
Evident reason, incidentally, is that under Conte Mourinho, Spurs didn't necessarily have the 65-70% possession that Bayern often had, right? Yeah. So that could be another explanation.
Yeah.
I just find it fascinating because you can do so many things with Harry Kane. And as you know, I'm Mr. Number One Tuchelista. I am curious to see how he's going to try to make this work.
I wouldn't try too hard, Gab. I wouldn't try.
Right, what do you do? Just send Kane out there? No, Harry, do whatever you want.
From your eyes and from fans watching on, don't try too hard to figure out what Harry Kane and Thomas Tuchel's relationship is going to be, because they're signing, if they do sign him, an unbelievably intelligent footballer.
They have an unbelievably intelligent and talented number 10 in the team, and his name is Jamal Musiala.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and Tuchel, especially at Bayern, you have to work on patterns of play.
Of course.
This isn't... So... What I'm envisioning, I guess, is situations where, you know, Bayern play Freiburg or whatever, and there's eight people in the box and everything's all crowded forward, right? Yeah. So you want Kane to move and you want Kane to drop off, maybe take some marker with him, probably wouldn't. At some point, when spaces are so tight, you have to maintain your balance and your shape, and you have to put your players in a situation where they can hurt the opposition.
Yeah.
That requires chemistry and that requires time. Fundamentally, you are making a decision where you're deciding, okay, if I get Kane to generate space for Musiala to run into.
Yep.
That's great. That's brilliant. One way of attacking. Yep. And then I'll alternate the two things. But
And then you've got wingers who can put crosses in the box.
But if I just leave Kane in the box because he's good in the air, because I've got people who can provide wingers even in messy areas, because Kane also has that eye for goal, he knows where the ball's going to go, do I want Kane dropping off? So at some point, he's going to have to develop a system of patterns of plays that are either going to hinge towards the Kane in the box or going to hinge into the Kane as additional 10.
Or both. Right?
Or both. Or it could be 50-50.
Close your eyes, right? Fast forward 12 months, Harry Kane will have 30 goals.
In the Bundesliga.
Yes.
Done. All right. You heard it here. That is Don Hutchinson's promise. First 10 people who tweet my account, Don's going to treat you to a steak dinner if Harry Kane does not score 30 goals for Bayern.
Well done, steak, though.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. Don, not just the Premier League, but La Liga kicks off this weekend. Shall we check in with Alex Kirkland?
Let's do it.
Alex, welcome aboard. Look, we're used to it being a three-horse race, sometimes a two-horse race. Real Madrid, Barcelona. I'm not sure that Atleti have improved over the summer, but they certainly improved in the second half of last season, and Ronaldo's presumably going to be fit again. Is it a three-horse race?
I would like to think it would be. Maybe that's me being optimistic, but I do think, as you say, that Atletico, you look at last season, this happens with Atletico every few years where they have a bit of an identity crisis. They try and look for a different style. Maybe they give up on that. They go back to the old Atletico and they get it together. And that's what happened last season. Over the second half of last season, Atletico picked up more points than any other team in La Liga, including champions Barca. So if they carry that on, I'd like to think Atleti could challenge Madrid and Barca. But yes, of course, it's going to be about Madrid and Barca. It always is. They're by far the two strongest teams, and in particular the squads, not just the starting 11, but the strength in depth they've got on the bench as well. It far exceeds any other team in La Liga, including Atletico Madrid. But yeah, I'm feeling optimistic. I think we might well see a proper three-horse title race in La Liga this season.
Alex, one of the contenders, Real Madrid, I'm fascinated to know what's going to happen to their squad under Ancelotti in the next couple of weeks and months. Obviously, they're very stacked on quality in midfield, but the number nine position, now Benzema's gone, and Mbappe's got his 77-odd million quid from PSG from his loyalty bonus. Does that then open up a space for Real Madrid to potentially sign him this summer, or are we still looking and thinking it might happen on a free next year?
It's still wait and see, isn't it, right now as we speak. I've been fairly confident that at some point, even if it's right at the end of the transfer window, Mbappe will be playing for Real Madrid this season. But you're right, as it is, you look at this Real Madrid squad, and it is, as you say, stacked in midfield with not as many options up front. Ancelotti is quite pragmatic about this kind of thing. He's been quite open about it as well. He's been saying in pre-season, look, based on this squad, we're going to try something different. We're going to go with a four-man midfield, a midfield diamond with two players up front, which at the moment looks like being Vinicius and Rodrigo up front, because, of course, as you say, Benzema is out of the equation. And then a midfield four, which Ancelotti has been saying will get the best out of Jude Bellingham, playing Bellingham as a number 10, with then Camavinga, Tchouameni, Valverde, and you've still got, as you say, Kroos and Modric in there as well. Plenty of options in midfield. But that midfield four is Ancelotti's plan. But let's see if he sticks with it, because the results in pre-season have been mixed. They've conceded a lot of goals. They conceded 3 goals against Barca in pre-season, 3 goals against Juventus as well. So the defence is something that Ancelotti has to tighten up if he sticks with this new system. But of course, if Mbappe arrives, maybe that system goes out the window and they go back to the old 4-3-3.
It's not written in stone that they play 4-3-3, and I think you kind of answered
it
there.
Seems like it is, though, isn't it?
I do get the sense that, I mean, on the back of what he said, with Rodrigo, Joselu, and Vinicius, the only strikers, only forwards, rather, even plus Alvaro, it seems to me like they're leaving a space open for Mbappe. If he doesn't come, do you think they get somebody cheap and cheerful on loan, maybe, just to have an extra body in the mix?
There might be a last-minute sort of quick fix if Mbappe doesn't happen. There's been some talk of that. And over the last season, we've reported they've looked at a number of sort of strikers. People like Vlahovic, for example, was one option they were looking at earlier in the season.
Vlahovic is neither cheap nor cheerful, by the way. But go ahead.
Okay. But he was the sort of player they were looking at over last season. And maybe they'll go back to some of those candidates as I say, a quick fix if Mbappe doesn't happen. Because if not, you're right, they're short. Joselu is the only proper senior centre forward in the squad. Yes, Alvaro, he's a kid, but he didn't play much at the end of last season. Vinicius and Rodrigo, interesting as a front two. It involves a bit of adaptation mostly from Vinicius, because he's played, of course, wide on the left traditionally. It means him coming a bit more infield. Ancelotti says that's not a problem. Ancelotti says that Vinicius likes it, but it is a change for him, so he would have to adapt. Rodrigo, I think, is perfectly suited to playing either in a front two or a front three. But that is the big question mark. Do they have enough firepower if Mbappe doesn't end up coming?
All right, let's open the big financial can of worms that is Barcelona here. The Dembele business with him gone, I don't think that's a tragedy. Correct me if I'm wrong, because we saw a lot of them. You have Rafinha there. We saw a lot of them playing with essentially the winger and the center forward. And then you've got Gavi in kind of the flex position. You've got Pedri de Jong. That's fine. Oriol Romeu, can he fill Busquets' big shoes? And obviously you've got Gundogan in the mix.
Ah, he's on a free.
Assuming, well, where are we with this registration business? They're going to be fine, right, with the Dembele money?
They should be. Look, if, again, as we speak, if they've already got Kessier out of the door, if Dembele gets done as well, then they should have enough at least to register the likes of Gundogan, who would be a priority for them. But right now, with very little time to go until they get their season started on Sunday, I think it was 13 players they had registered with La Liga before the departure of Kessier. If Dembele goes as well, that would be down to 11. But they would get, like I say, at least the likes of Gundogan done in time. But maybe not everybody. Maybe not everybody. This annual drama that we have now with Barca's finances, they're looking for more investment to get these problems sorted. What I would say is that if they manage to get all that sorted, I think Barca have signed incredibly well this summer. And like I said, I think getting Gundogan on a free is brilliant business. Yeah. Getting Inigo Martinez, the defender from Athletic Club, on a free as well. Romeo, I think, is a really smart signing. He was exceptional for Girona last season. And I think he can replace certainly the Busquets that we saw in the last few years. So I think they've bought very well. And like you say, I talk about four-man midfields. That's been the preference for Xavi, certainly in the big games last season. As you say, he went for Gavi as that fourth midfielder and went for a front two, which is Lewandowski plus one, which might be Rafinha. It might be Ansu Fati, who's looked quite good in pre-season as well. I think Dembele, yes, he's been frustrating. He's been incredibly talented. I think they will miss him, because I think he was, on his day, one of their best players. But it wasn't always his day. So I think they can get by without him.
All right, sticking with Barcelona here, you mentioned the squad. I just taking a look at the 11, it seems to me that there's two questions, I think, I would have it. And I agree with what you said earlier about Ansu Fati. I think at some point, you know, I'm glad he stayed. Yeah. Obviously, there's pressures with his agent, his contract, and so on. I think he's somebody who's got such a tremendous upside. It would have been mad to let him go. And, of course, you also have Ferran Torres, who nobody seems to like other than me, in the mix to give you options, but whatever, right? But I want to ask about midfield and right back. So, right back, we were talking about this off air.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Jules Koundé does a very specific type of right back job, but he's really a center back. And I hate labels, but it seems to me weird to be going the Aaron Wan-Bissaka route with him, right? And the other thing is in midfield. I agree with you about Oriol Romeu being able to do a job for Sergio Busquets, but so if you have Gavi as your fourth midfielder, you have two other slots in midfield. and you have Pedri, and you have Gundogan, and you have De Jong. Do we get these weird situations where, because Gundogan is the bigger name, it's going to be Gundogan, De Jong, and Pedri in some fashion in midfield, and then Oriol Romeo has to wait for them to ship a few goals to get into the lineup, and they're like, oh, look, we're so much more balanced with Oriol Romeo in there, and like, duh.
I could see that happening. I could see Romeo ending up in the team, even if he doesn't necessarily start in the team. But yeah, there's serious competition for places there. I think Frankie De Jong has to start. I think Gundogan probably has to start as well. And yeah, you've got one of Pedri or Gavi in the front three. But if you've got Romeo in there, you've still got one player too many. Let's see what happens with fitness, because Pedri missed a lot of last season with injuries. Gavi's had a back problem that's not too serious, I think, in pre-season. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see which is Xavi's first choice midfield. I think Romeo, like I say, sooner or later will end up being in there with Gundogan and Frankie De Jong. But then you've got one of Pedri or Gavi. And how do you leave out one of them if both are fit and available? In terms of the right-back situation, it's baffling that they haven't moved to sort this out during the summer transfer window, because right-back has been a massive priority, especially for Xavi. You talk about Koundé and being a centre-back playing at right-back. The other option is Araujo, who is also a centre-back playing at right back, but we saw him do a fantastic job, for example, against Vinicius in the Clásico last season. Xavi wants a proper right back. The sort of debate within Barca has been about, do they go for a youngster like Fresneda at Valladolid, who's been linked to some Premier League teams as well, or do you go for someone like João Cancelo or someone like Van Foyth of Villarreal? They're the three names that Barca have been looking at with very different profiles. And again, it comes down to the finances in terms of what they can get done. But they want to do something, because Koundé doesn't like playing at right back, and he's been forced to play there time and time again. Araujo can do it sometimes, but I think Araujo is probably their best centre-back, so you want him playing at centre-back.
No, I completely agree with you. Of those names, I mean, I would assume Fresneda is going to cost you some money simply because he's younger, has the upside. Foy, I still think of, he's another tweener. I know he's played right back, but...
See, I was thinking there when Alex was saying, and you were talking about the centre-backs that have been shifted to right back, I wonder if Xavi's ever toyed with the idea, because he's got so many good centre-backs in that sort of, I'll say it loosely, position. I wonder if he's ever toyed with the idea of going with a three.
Yeah, but then would you lose work? A spot in midfield and you have a million midfielders.
Gundogan can play off Lewandowski, can play where he wants. Would that work, Alex? Has he ever considered going to a three?
It's something I guess they could have done, I guess, using Dembele as sort of the right wing back. And I guess now it would be a case of putting another player into that position. I think my understanding is that when Xavi first came in at Barca, early days, his idea was to play with sort of like a 3-4-3 kind of system. That was the system that he liked, but he's never quite got as far as implementing that system, and it's ended up being more of a back four. But I think he likes a back three, absolutely.
I think you'd have to move De Jong back into the back three. That could be an option if you really want to do that.
Done before, isn't he?
Which we've seen before at times. I just quickly on the center forward, is it, if Lewandowski goes down for whatever reason, is it still a case of let's play Ferran or Ansu up front and keep our fingers crossed?
I think it probably is. Lewandowski, I mean, even for him, there were one or two question marks. Of course, he was the top scorer in La Liga last season, scored a lot of goals. But when you broke down the games that he was scoring those goals in, it wasn't always the biggest games. I think he'll still score loads of goals. But yeah, if he's fit, of course he starts. Otherwise, it probably is Ferran Torres, who you keep, I don't know, you're sort of waiting for him to take a step up, but it never quite happens. Ansu Fati can play up there as well. I mean, those are probably, yeah, I think those are the only options, really. I can't think of anyone else who could really do that job. They will be hoping that Lewandowski stays fit.
Shifting to Real Madrid, Don asked before about Mbappe and how stacked this team is in midfield, the formation. I just want to ask you more generally about Carlo Ancelotti, because this is the last year in his contract. There's all those rumors that people don't like to talk about, or unless you happen to be Brazilian, where he's leaving to join the Brazilian team. One of the things I wondered about in terms of Florentino Perez is, should he be thinking about succession? Should you maybe have treated this season as maybe let Ancelotti go now, bring somebody else, say maybe somebody younger who you like or whatever, and say, all right, let's lay the groundwork make this team younger. Whether Xabi Alonso would be one guy who's been talked about a lot. Maybe they don't think he's ready. I just want to get your sense on it. Is it going to impact things that this is Ancelotti's last year? And Has there been talk of succession, of moving on, and maybe this, you know, obviously also with players, maybe you let Modric and Kroos go this summer, you save yourself more money, and then you pick up another, you know, expensive, high quality youngster, and you sell it as a transition season. Has that ever been part of the discussion, or can you not have those conversations because you're Real Madrid?
Yeah, the problem is that there are no transition seasons. Real Madrid, because you're expected to win everything up to and including the Champions League every single season. In terms of the coach, the calculation they made, I think, was that they didn't think that any of the sort of succession candidates they were looking at was ready. You mentioned Xabi Alonso. He's the one they really like. They just felt like this summer would be just a little bit too soon, and he's gone on to sign a new contract, hasn't he, at Leverkusen. Otherwise, you've got Raul, who's been doing a good job with the B team with Castilla. He's the other one that's been talked about, but they thought that right now neither of them would be quite ready to step up, and so they thought, let's stick with Ancelotti for another year. But it is a very weird situation that it's such a public kind of courtship from Brazil, which Ancelotti even was quite happy to talk about at first. Now he's keeping quiet. He said, I'm not going to talk about Brazil at all this season. Let's see if that lasts. But it will be a talking point if Madrid's start to wobble, if the pressure starts to build. There will be question marks about, you know, if he's going anyway, do we not look to move now? It's a potential kind of sort of ticking clock there for Ancelotti, but he can probably deal with it, and he's probably got enough kind of credit built up, I think, with what he's done at Madrid, both in the first spell and the second spell, to be able to hang on. I think it would take something pretty catastrophic for Ancelotti to go during the course of the season. I still think that would most likely happen at the end of the season.
That's the only problem you foresee, doesn't it? If Real Madrid, like Alex said, had a wobble and lost a few games, it would be, Ancelotti's got his mind on Brazil.
Yeah, and which has kind of already happened. Yeah. I mean, I think he can manage crisis situations better than just about anybody.
Oh, definitely.
But still, it is Real Madrid. It is the biggest of big chairs.
One eyebrow might just go up.
Don, you wanted to ask about Sevilla.
Yes, Alex. So I'm doing the Super Cup midweek against Man City next week. And obviously, I've done the Roma game when they won the trophy in last summer. Sorry, the end of last season. Is there anything I should look out for in terms of their squad depth? Have they lost any players? Have they signed any players? How are they looking?
I'm fascinated to see how Sevilla get on this season, because last year was such I'd say roller coaster, but it probably doesn't do justice to just how up and down it was. The fact they were relegation candidates for much of the season, ended up, as you say, winning the Europa League, their seventh Europa League. What an incredible turnaround from José Luis Mendilibar, the biggest job of his career, had never managed at this level, got it together, was supposed to be sort of a short-term quick fix. Now he's got the job long-term. You mentioned the squad. Of course, the big issue with the squad building is they've lost Monchi. You know, Monchi, who was running the club, no exaggeration to say running the club behind the scenes from top to bottom for 20 years. He's gone to Aston Villa. He was sort of the transfer guru, although his magic touch had started to slip a little bit in the last couple of seasons. Some of the signings weren't. A lot of the signings from last summer really didn't work out. I think you look at the squad right now, I think it looks weak. They've done one or two deals, but you look at sort of the key players there, and you're still looking at players like Jesus Navas, Ivan Rakitic, Fernando, all these guys in their mid to late 30s. And, you know, they've got, they rely on En-Nesyri up front for the goals, but they've been looking to get rid of him if the right sort of money came in. I'm not that confident about the squad, but I believe in Mendilibar. I think that he can probably get the absolute maximum out of them.
Alex, I have to ask you again. Where did you say Monchi went?
To Villa.
Yeah, it just sounded like before he pronounced it Aston Villa, something like that.
Got a twang.
A little bit Spanish.
Yeah, many years in Spain might do that to you. So this being the case, every year I feel like, oh, look, you know, especially in the first half of the season, I'm like, oh, Real Sociedad, this is the coming together, you know, regardless of who they have there, or Oyarzabal, or when they had Alexander Isak 2 years ago. They've made some changes. They've reinvested well. Should I be getting excited about La Real again? Can they break into the triumvirate of evil?
The top three, I would say no. I would say to repeat a top four finish.
Okay, sorry, let me amend that. Can they trick me into thinking in November that they might actually break into the top three?
Well, remember at one point last season, they looked like, you know, it was never going to last, but they were briefly sort of talked up as potential title contenders. And yeah, maybe that could happen again. Of course, they've got the distraction of Champions League football this season. Let's see how they cope with that. You mentioned one or two changes in the squad. They've lost Alexander Sorloth, who's gone to Villarreal. They've brought in Andre Silva to try and sort of replace him in terms of goals. Taki Kubo will still be the one to watch, though. Taki Kubo had a took a massive step up last season. He was their best, most exciting player. And if he continues that development, I think he's the one to watch, along with Oyarzabal, as you mentioned. So, yeah, without doubt for me, they're the favourites for fourth place. They might well be pushed by others like Betis. I'm not convinced about Villarreal, maybe Athletic, who knows, all those teams that finished sort of fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth last season. But I think Villarreal are firm favourites for top four, yeah.
You mentioned Villarreal, of course, picking up the only living Sorloth in captivity, as he's known, on this program. You mentioned the other contenders there, Betis, Athletic Bilbao. On Betis, when you have Canales and Fekir and so on, and sometimes you're so you can play such wonderful football, why don't we give them a little more consideration rather than saying, well, they might push for fourth place? Like, should the standards be higher given the players Betis have?
I think they've got some exceptional players, and they've got a really very good coach in Pellegrini, which is the key.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think we're sort of rating them about where we should be, which is competing for a European place, and maybe top four might just be beyond there. We started last season at Sevilla, was forced out by, I think it was in December, before even the January transfer window, had a few months out. He's been picked up by Betis with a point to prove. And let's see if he can get... I mean, to be fair to Isco, he wasn't terrible for Sevilla last season. He wasn't the problem for Sevilla in the early part of last season. So let's see if he's fit, and let's see how he does. It's probably too much to expect the Isco of, you know, that we saw for Real Madrid in 2016, 2017, 2018. But he could be useful, especially with Fekir, I think, out at least for the start of the season, out through injury. So in the meantime, Isco might be the one to watch. They've lost a big player, though, in Canales. Sergio Canales, who went off to Mexico. He was probably Betis' most important player. They basically had to let him go because their finances were so tight. They had to get rid of someone significant to make room to register all their other players and the signings. And they went for Canales. But he will be a big miss for sure.
Sergio Canales, of course, the one-time wunderkind. Mm-hmm. Final question, just because I dislike who he is and what he stands for so much. Peter Lim's Valencia, flirting with relegation, angry fans, and you know, fans in Valencia are, these are real fans. I mean, I know it's one of the things that always gets me about Spain, right? We focus on Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico, rightly so, because they're so big and they're so popular and they're so good. But in terms of the most intense fans, pound for pound,
I was at the Arsenal game about 3 or 4 years ago in the Mestalla, and what an atmosphere. I think it was Europa League game.
I'm not going to ask you, I don't want you to upset anybody to rank them, but for me, so just giving you my view, it has to either be like Sevilla, where I think they have the highest percentage of Sevilla residents who are season ticket holders of either Betis or Sevilla. Mm. Or it's got to be Valencia, where people say the fans are too demanding, but man, like, talk about blood, sweat, and tears for so long.
Can't be too demanding when a team like Valencia are down at the bottom of the league.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I find it remarkable that all these owners are still there, and you know, there isn't a non-violent way of removing them. It seems like they've tried every non-violent way. Not that I'm advocating violence.
The decline has been incredible. When you think that a few years ago with Marcelino in charge, they made it into the top four. And basically, the squad has been systematically asset stripped ever since. Season after season, they've lost their best players, and it keeps happening. They keep getting worse. They keep getting closer and closer to relegation. Last year was as close as it gets, and they were basically saved by the kids. Yeah, and kids like young Javi Guerra, the midfielder, coming in, one or two others who came in, scored important goals to get the points they need to stay up. But can they do it again? I don't know. Ruben Baraja, who's a club legend, former player, I was brought in last season as coach and saved them. And he really sort of put his faith in the kids, and it paid off. I don't know if it's going to work over the course of the season. I mean, talk about weak squads. You look at their squad, and it is, I mean, you've got someone like Gaia, who's still there, the club captain at left back, who might be looking around thinking, you know, should I still be here? But otherwise, it's very, very poor. And Baraja wants signings. The players have asked for signings. No one has come in. I'm worried about Valencia because, like you say, massive club, you know, have a very strong case for being the third biggest or at least the fourth biggest club in Spain. Mestalla is the best stadium in Spain for me. I agree completely. And this, them going down, they've only been relegated once in their history back in the 80s. It might happen again this season, and that would be catastrophic, of course, for them and for the league as well, because they're one of those clubs that you need them there.
Maybe it'll be a positive if they get American Capital and Lynn and those guys out. Alex, thank you so much. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Liga. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's do it.
We called the answer, Don. We talked Monday about how City were a little short in the attacking third after Riyad Mahrez's departure. I wrote a column about it. Clearly, Cheeky read it because now they're bidding for Lucas Paqueta. Is the packet worth 60 million?
The packet is 100% worth 60 and above. You're pulling a face.
With Pep, maybe, yeah.
No, I think he's a player, and I think you can see the end to the season he had last season under David Moyes in a struggling side, how good he was, especially in Europe, and we all know how talented he is. And my takeaway from commentating on the Community Shield, and I wouldn't judge a Pep team on one game, but when you lose Riyad Mahrez and when you lose Gundogan, approximately 20 goals and the quality that they bring, with De Bruyne being injured, who didn't play any minutes in a pre-season for Man City, so he's obviously weeks and weeks behind, I thought they looked a little bit short in that sort of attacking flair area. No surprise they've gone in for Paquetá.
I like his versatility.
And he'll be better in a Pep side, by the way.
No question. And I like his versatility as well, both in that attacking midfield position, also further back in the Kovacic role, frankly, because, yeah, you know, listen, Kovacic hasn't started more than 23 games in a season since 2015. And that, to me, that should set off some...
Well, if you think Man City are going to have possession as they normally do, you want someone like Paquetá on the ball pulling strings, don't you?
No question. Exactly. No question.
What's happening at Chelsea? I mean, now Christopher Nkunku requires knee surgery. Bit of a crisis going on. Is this a blow?
This is a massive blow. The reason it's a massive blow is that this is your star signing who's come in, right? He's not just some guy who was already there. It basically means that when he comes back, he's going to have to be reintegrated again. You're losing goals. All of a sudden, you know, this idea that, well, they'll be fine in attack, Nico Jackson, because he's got people around him who can score goals. Well, nah, not really, because if Nkunku's out, Mount is gone. You know, obviously, you've got players that you can round out the team, but it's a lot of guys who are still finding themselves, like Mudrik.
Player. I mean, does that change the dynamics now with Lukaku? Nkunku being injured.
I mean, they're such different players.
No,
Lukaku ship has sailed,
right,
personally. We were talking off air before. Sorry to
talking
put this
or an argument?
Well, you had some things to say about Liverpool and their pursuit of a defensive midfielder.
Yes, so they've been in for Lavia and they offered about 40, rising then to 45 in the second bid, and now apparently Chelsea have come in with 48. My issue is, and it's nothing to do with the player, because he's 19, he's a fantastic young talent, a really, really good player. My issue is, and it's a very simplistic one, but if you're at Liverpool and you're Jurgen Klopp, and I honestly think Caicedo makes Liverpool title contenders. I think he, not so much anyone, but I think he's that good. And Brighton fans will tell you he's that good. He's a sensational player. Twice the player that Lavia is, in my opinion. And when I look at what Liverpool have done in terms of bringing Szoboszlai in and bringing McAllister in on top of Diaz, on top of Nunez, on top of Gakpo, on top of Salah, Caicedo for £100 million-ish makes Liverpool title contenders. Now, you've got £60 million in from Fabinho and Henderson. That's a £40 million deficit. Go and spend the money on Caicedo.
You got to find that $40 million. I have a slightly different theory here. I get where you're taking. I agree with you. Obviously, Caicedo would make Liverpool a lot better. He'd make Chelsea a lot
better.
A club
like Liverpool, can't they find $40 million for a player that makes you into a title contender?
So if you're talking about finding $40 million, regular listeners will know this about why do they have so many forwards, right? Because obviously Jota, it's Gakpo, it's Nunez, it's Diaz, and it's Mo Salah.
Yeah.
You know, so many, they're not just forwards, they're not bodies, but like they're really good, highly
exceptional.
Paid forwards. I think they're insuring themselves against the fact that Rami Abbas, Salah's agent, says, no, he's not going anywhere. But the reality is the Saudi transfer window goes on until mid-September.
Yeah.
I think they're insuring themselves against the possibility that something happens. It's a kind of offer that they can't refuse. Maybe they lose Salah, and that's why they keep that extra fifth forward.
Could not.
If it doesn't look like that's not going to happen,
could not.
If you need to sell one of those guys to go, and I think the most saleable asset is probably Jota, although he's very, very good, to fund the midfielder that you want and that you need, then maybe that's what
But my angle is Fabinho sold, Henderson sold, $60 million in. You've got no Naby. You got no Naby Keita wages. You got no James Milner wages. You got no Oxlade Chamberlain wages. You've still got Thiago. You've still got Bacicic when he comes back. Trent in that position. The specialised holding midfield player, what Caicedo brings, I honestly think, and I stand by with no bias whatsoever, I stand by that. If he goes in there on top of what Liverpool have got, I think immediately they could be title contenders. I think he is that good on top of what they've got.
Right.
I think it's a no-brainer.
Caicedo's biggest fan here.
Yeah, absolutely. Messi's gone. Mbappe on his way. Neymar now could be shipped on as well. Has that ship sailed now? Is this the end of PSG? Will they let him go? $60 million.
They've told him. They've told him. Apparently, it's been reported that he's been free to move on. He's been left out.
Is this the end of the experiment?
Well, you can tell him that. Apparently, they want around €60 million. He's got 3 years left on his deal. He's on enormous salaries. I think they know very well that there's nobody in Europe who can afford that. I know he's going to be like, he wants to go back to Barcelona. You know what? I'm tired of this crap. Right?
Yeah.
If you're Neymar, you really want to go back to Barcelona? Then you go, you tell your agent, you cancel your contract.
Pay it.
You sign for Barcelona for a fee that allows them to register you. Because you can read the papers as well as anybody.
Say, I'm with you.
You know what condition they're in. Otherwise, cut it out with this Barcelona thing.
Yeah.
Because you're basically, it's like you're mocking the fans, essentially.
And,
right?
And the trouble with Neymar, right, it gets a lot of flack, right? It gets so much stick. He hasn't necessarily brought it on himself, but when he left Barca to get out the Messi shadow and go and chase, individual trophies, Ballon d'Ors, etc., worst mistake he's ever made in his life trying to chase that individual trophy, right?
Right.
Now he's angling for a move back. I totally am with you. Pay up your contract, give a little bit back to say, listen, this is not work. It's not working for me. Can we find a solution?
Yeah, or otherwise, go to MLS, go to Saudi Arabia, go to whatever.
That contradicts the whole thing. If he was chasing Ballon d'Or, now you go to Saudi.
I think he's thinking 2026 World Cup. I think that's, and he's thinking Copa America before that. But recently, dude, at some point, like, you can't keep going on with this, like, pretendo Barcelona thing, because you know that right now, Barcelona can't afford you.
Yeah.
It's quarterfinal time in the Women's World Cup, Don, since our last show. Australia still without Sam Kerr, though she did come on as a sub. Not Sam Kerr as a starter. They dispatched Denmark 2-0. France eliminated Morocco 4-0. And Colombia edged Jamaica in a game that was a lot closer than I would have thought it would be. You love your predictions and percentages. So let's do this for the quarterfinal.
Right,
Great risk.
I don't mind admitting that I'm very new, the last 6 months to a year, to women's football, which I totally enjoy.
We've watched the World Cup.
I don't mind admitting it. Brilliant. And every expert that I've listened to has said about predictions, they've all gone out the window.
Exactly.
So good luck to me trying to predict what's going to happen from now when the experts can't.
All right.
I'll give it a shot.
Perfect. Spain, Holland, percentage chance to advance.
Spain 70-30 to go through.
That sounds about right to me. Japan, Sweden.
I've not seen either team play, but I've been impressed by Japan, so I will go Japan 60-40 to go through.
I like that. I'll go 65 Japan. Maybe that's my heart speaking. Australia, France, big one.
France to go through, no?
Oh, Jules is going to like that.
Yeah, I've done it.
Jules is going
to
like that.
I've done it just for Jules. So France to go through to play England.
England, Colombia.
Well, I think England win it from here, no?
All right. Well, let's see if Miss Caicedo has something to say about that.
Right. The Premier League CEO, Richard Masters, spoke to the media yesterday, Gab. You were there. The biggest headline seemed to be about Saudi and not being a threat to the Premier League's dominance.
Yeah, so it's funny. So Richard Masters is very, very measured
when he
speaks, right? Yeah, He's not somebody who's going to say crazy things. But, you know, people never ask him the Saudi Pro League. And like he said, the Saudi Pro League has spent about $450 million on about 20-odd players. Mm-hmm. It's great that there's investment. They've been around since the 1970s. He reminded people what many have said all along. The Premier League have like a 100-year head start.
Yeah.
They've got bigger brands.
Yeah.
They're a £6 billion pound plus industry. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of waters to go under that bridge before Saudi sink in the same conversation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Harry Maguire is close to leaving Manchester United for one of your old clubs, Don, mm-hmm. West Ham. Thoughts?
I think for West Ham, a really good signing. I think Harry Maguire now has got to read the room at what's happening at Man United when Luke Shaw was taking over his position, being stripped of the captain's armband, stripped, I say that loosely, it's just been taken off and given to someone else. I think he probably knows in his heart of hearts he's not going to get too many minutes.
So the clubs have agreed a deal in principle, right around 30 million.
Yeah.
But he has yet to green light it.
Yeah.
Do you think he will?
I think he should, because why would you stay at a club like Man United if you're not going to play? Because you can be a part of their success, but you're not really a part of it because you're not playing. And joining a club like West Ham is a really good club to go and join. It actually reminds me about when he played for Leicester and how they played and they were quite defensively deep. West Ham will probably do the same with David Moyes, is what they've done over the last 18 months, which then definitely suits Harry Maguire. Where he struggled at Man United was being on the halfway line, being asked to run back and chase fast forward, which is not his game. So I think under David Moyes, and I think West Ham fans would like him, I think they'll take him. I think they'll give him the support. I think they'll really like him, which will help the player. And I think that's when you'll see probably Harry Maguire start to grow, because at the minute, I just feel as though, which is really unfair, he's the laughing and joke on social media about when he makes the mistake. All players make mistakes, but for some reason he gets criticised. So go and make the move. Go and enjoy your football. Go and play for West Ham. Victor Osimhen has yet to sign that new contract with Napoli, Gab. Should the fans get worried?
I mean, he's locked up until 2025, right?
Right.
So the reality is, the only scenario where he leaves is he makes it clear that he's not going to extend his deal, and then you got 2 years left, and then Napoli say, oh, well, then we better cash it down.
I've seen some ridiculous numbers.
Yeah. So
Saudi of offering him.
There's interest in Saudi Arabia. I don't know that he feels like this is the right time for him to go to Saudi Arabia. He's 23, 24 years old. My understanding is what his camp have asked for is, look, we'll sign a new deal, but we want a clause, and it's going to be a good clause, $150 million. Napoli say, well, no, clause needs to be higher, needs to be 200 million, and maybe needs to be even higher if it's a club outside Europe. Like, if
that's fine. That's fine. I mean, 200 outside Europe seems fine. I mean,
because you're basically saying Saudi Arabia.
Exactly.
Right?
250 like Mbappe, but 150 seems for Europe.
It doesn't seem like a crazy clause. Obviously, if you're a seaman, you want a lower clause. And, you know, so I think this is going to rumble on. But what we've seen is he's pretty unflappable. He's such a good pro. He's been such a good pro that I think this talk's going to go on in the
background. I hope he stays.
The good thing is they're doing a lot of talking, right?
Yeah.
Which suggests that you'd rather see people talking a lot than not talking
at all. I honestly hope he stays.
Ins and outs at Arsenal, Don. Matt Turner, U.S. men's national team goalkeeper. Matt Turner has moved to Nottingham Forest for $7 million, rising to $10 million. He's going to be replaced by Brent Samariya. It's a $3 million loan fee with an option to buy at $27 million next summer. Do you like these moves? I get the Turner one. He needs to play.
He needs to play.
Raya, like, what is this, Ramsdale smell or something? Like, Raya casts a shadow over Ramsdale, doesn't he?
See, I heard the great Peter Schmeichel talking about this morning on social media, and he doesn't like the idea of having two number ones going for the same position.
Wait. Peter Schmeichel, of course, who was backed up by the legendary Raymond van der Gaal for so many years. How does Raymond feel? Is he saying that Raymond was never in competition?
No, I don't know. But I actually go against Peter on this one because I think it's great competition. You look at Edison and Ortega, and when Edison hasn't been in the side, Ortega is still a very good goalkeeper with the ball at his feet as well as Edison. So I think it makes sense, in my opinion, if you've got someone like David Raya going to Arsenal and putting pressure on Ramsdale, because Ramsdale's weak part of his game is playing out from the back. Unbelievable goalkeeper, brilliant goalkeeper with loads of confidence and commands that box. But playing out from the back is not his strength, where Raya's is. So I quite like, and I heard Aaron Ramsdale talk about it yesterday, and he actually said, bring it on.
You know, what's he going to say?
No, but I think it's great for a player, because if you're trying to nick my position, I'm not going to be all moody on you because you've come in. I'm saying, come on, Gab, let's bring it on. Can you raise my game? I'll raise your game, and hopefully we'll get success. It shouldn't just be a nailed on number one and you're just a number two and I'm not fit.
I think
fit.
It's a bit different with goalkeepers. Why? I understand where Bruce Michael's coming from. Because in most cases,
I think it's more demoralizing if a goalkeeper comes in and he knows he's never ever going to start the big games because that man there's the number one. That's got to be more demoralizing than fighting for your position, no?
So your job though isn't to make sure that your goalkeeper, your reserve goalkeeper, isn't demoralized. He knows. I mean, David Raya knows that.
I know what it's like, right? When I'm competing for a place. Right. And on the Monday, you train hard. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you train hard. On the Friday, you know when the manager does his team and does the tactics and patterns of play. And you're in the res, he's got a bib on.
Okay.
That session kills you until you get your head back on again.
But you also know the reality, especially with goalkeepers, that the number one, I mean, I've gone to enough managers, certainly the conventional wisdom in the game, that they say that
I find it
they
bizarre
don't deal
how you
well
have...
with they don't deal well with pressure and
but I find it bizarre uncertainty. In any position on the pitch you can have competition but not for the number one jersey.
I mean, you can, but there's a reason why at just about every top club in the history of football there's been very few situations where you had a legitimate competition for the number one jersey.
This is the future.
And where you've had legitimate competition is because the number one wasn't good. So all we've heard is how good Ramsdale is, what a great leader he is, and so on. So if you're saying that to Ramsdale on the one hand, I have total faith in you. I bring in somebody, rather than Matt Turner, who, with all due respect to Matt Turner, is several rungs below
Ramsdale. But if you think about this logically, right, and you're your number one, and your backup goalkeeper is not as good as Aaron Ramsdale, when you then pick the backup goalkeeper, your team then is weaker. Why can't it be just as strong if you've got competition and David Raya comes in?
Well, because whenever an injured player is out.
But it shouldn't be, because now you've got two fantastic number ones, and whichever one you pick.
Right, except your number two, if your fantastic number one is playing regularly, then the number two never plays, so he's going to be rusty when he plays. I mean,
You're a manager and I'm your assistant now, we're having a Barney.
Clearly.
Right, Chelsea have been fined $10 million from UEFA, and now they're under investigation by the Premier League. What's Todd Boehly done now, Gab?
Okay, so be very clear, and we've been harsh on Boehly in the past. It's not Todd Boehly's fault.
Who's written that down then?
Todd Boehly's done. What he's done is he's done the right thing, Todd Boehly and Clearlake. So what happened was Chelsea self-reported to UEFA. Chelsea, of course, you might be wondering, why are UEFA even into this?
So is this financial?
This is purely financial. This is to when Chelsea basically went to UEFA and said, look, there's all these payments between 2012 and 2019 through these companies. We're not sure about this. We don't know if rules have been broken. We want to report these to you, to UEFA, to find out if there are some irregularities there.
So they've done the right thing then?
Well, they're the new owners, right? So they inherited these deals
It's nice for them, in my world, they've come forward and said, have we done anything wrong here?
They have. Now, they steeled themselves for this because you remember when they bought Chelsea for $2.5 billion, the Times and others reported that they withheld $100 million because when they did due diligence, they said, some of this stuff isn't really clear for us.
Right.
We don't want to incur a fine. We're going to withhold this money. We're going to pay it later once we've gotten the all clear on it. So that's what's happening. I think the Premier League has to investigate this as well because they have been fined. the fact that Chelsea's current owners have come forward and said, guys, this is what we found in the past when we weren't there.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have to look upon that favorably. So I wouldn't expect them to receive much more punishment. Wolves have appointed Gary O'Neill, formerly of Bournemouth, to replace Julian Lopetegui, who resigned a few days ago. Don, it's never a good look when the manager who kept you up walks out in preseason.
No.
This club's not in a good place.
No. And this story's been rumbling on for a fair few weeks, hasn't it? Everyone, from the understanding, thought that Lopetegui was going to walk, and now he has, days before the Premier League starts. The only thing I would say on the appointment of Gary O'Neill, I think it's a fantastic one. I think the job that he'd done when Scotty Parker left and said he's got the worst Bournemouth team in history when they got spanked 9, I think he was there at the time. And the job that Gary O'Neill done, I thought it was brilliant and bringing the team and the squad together. But I wonder what's going on in the background. So many Portuguese players have been signed over the years. I always wondered, what the DNA would look like if a lot of these players then moved on. And now Lopetegui's moved on.
Yeah, you know, I flagged this when it happened. This is an unhealthy conflict of interest situation with George Mendes and the ownership.
The appointment of the manager is good, but like you said, I wonder what the repercussions are.
But I want to ask you about Gary O'Neill, because I thought he was good because, look, Bournemouth, not a big budget, comes in, out, right? Others, like the guy who normally sits in your seat, say, hang on a minute, actually. I was shocked when Bournemouth let Gary O'Neill go, right?
Yeah.
And Jules said, well, no, it's not that shocking because they were trending the wrong way and so on. Like, so is he any good?
I think he's good.
All right.
I think he's very good. I think when Scotty Parker moved on and he said this team is
never... Scott Parker cannot be the benchmark of who's a good manager.
Well, yes and no, because one manager who's in charge is telling you, I've got the worst team in the world and we're never going to survive and we just lost 9. He goes, the new manager comes in and says, actually, these players are great. And why can't we have some harmony?
Hey,
and
he
look
seems
at the
like
job that he done.
That's what I thought. I thought, dude, you kept him up. I mean, whether Bournemouth was right moving on from him or not, but certainly has a job on his hands.
I think in the short term, they've moved very quickly on Gary O'Neill. And that, to me, seems like a good thing that they've moved on quickly rather than delaying it and then potentially going into a new season without a manager. So at least they've been hasty and made the right decision, or which seems like the right decision. Gab, we've talked about Lukaku Vlahovic business for the past month or so. Do we talk about it again? Is it a thing?
We do. There's reports in Italy saying that Chelsea have now said, like, all right, enough of this Vlahovic business.
Does he even want to move, Vlahovic?
I don't think he wants to move. I think he's made it. And now, obviously, if they kind of push him out the door and give him enough money, maybe he will move. But I don't think he has any great appetite for moving. If you look at his social posts and so on, he seems into it. He's fired up. Juventus play their annual traditional intra-squad friendly, Juventus Black against Juventus White, which is basically the first team against the next-gen team.
Yeah.
They won like 6-0 or something like that. The fans...
Lukaku's killing himself, isn't he?
No. The fans made it very, very clear where they stand. Massive abuse of Lukaku.
Which is not great, but it doesn't seem to be doing himself any good. Like,
they don't want Lukaku.
No, but no one seems to.
No, only Max Allegri wants Lukaku. This is the weird situation we're in. Now even Allegri's saying, well, no, Vlahovic is great. So the reading is that Juve have marched it back. So now, if you're Chelsea, what do you do with Lukaku?
Why didn't he just go to Inter?
Oh my, I don't know. This is one of those existential questions. Chelsea have named Reece James as club captain after the departure of Cesar Azpilicueta. Don, does it matter who the club captain is?
Yes and no. I think it's great for the player. I always performed, which I thought I performed better when I had the captains on band.
Which clubs did you captain?
Everton. And I thought when I took the team out there at Goodison, for some reason you sort of grew a little bit and you got the armband, you got responsibility, you're in charge of the dressing room. And in my day when a captain was a captain, you were the link between Walter Smith or Howard Kendall, the manager, to what then goes down into the dressing rooms. You're a sort of semi link. Are the lads are training too hard?
Did Archie Knox still shout at you?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that was their job. It was bad cop with him and Walter. That's how it worked, which is great. But I think for Reece James, I think, you know, hopefully for him now, stay injury free. And now you're in charge of that dressing room and you're the link with the man.
He's young.
Yourself and the manager and the voice to the fans, and they can visibly see you wearing the armband.
He's young, but then again, this is a young
and
team.
Talented.
He's been at the club for a long time and he's super talented.
I think it makes loads of sense. I think for him to up his game, I think wearing the armband could be amazing for him.
And as long as we discover that stepping on opponents while they're lying on the ground isn't a family trait, then he'll be fine.
United have been linked with three possible replacements if Maguire goes. Who's the favourite? Who's in contention?
Three names that have been thrown out, there's four actually. Some have suggested Mark Cahy, who I think, though, would cost a lot of money. There are Jean-Claire Todibo, Benjamin Pavard, and Edmund Tapsoba. Now, it's interesting. I think Todibo is at Nice, Sir Jim Ratcliffe's club. He's done really well. He was really highly touted youngster when going to Barcelona and what else. Of the three, I think Tapsoba is the guy who has the biggest upside.
I was going to say, when I seen Pavard, I thought that's even though he's a good player, do you want to be fourth choice centre back?
I think Pavard would probably back himself to improve. I don't think any of these guys want to be fourth choice.
Well, they're not getting in ahead of Martinez or Varane, are they?
Yeah, but remember, Varane, it's the age-old thing. How many games is he going to play? And then you just got to beat out Lindelof, right? Yeah. I do wonder, though, just simply, you know, going back to that thing about how, you know, it was reported they have $120 million to spend. If you manage to sell Maguire for $30 million, you're right at that $120 million, which means then you have no more money to spend unless you move McTominay or Fred, whatever, another player.
Yeah.
Or maybe you have to do a loan deal, which United don't like to do.
Well, the rumors are Fred to Fulham and McTominay maybe to West Ham. Maybe.
If you really want to feel the need to go and sell both of them, I wouldn't do that. I'd keep one of them. I think a Pavard loan deal for an extra body might be doable, but again, United don't like doing that. So I don't know. Certainly of these guys, Tapsoba is the guy who's considered to have the biggest upside. Liverpool have been linked with Southampton's Romeo Lavia for some time now. Chelsea are reportedly in the mix too. We talked about Liverpool and Lavia before. Again, it seems like for both clubs, though, like it's, Caicedo's our first choice if we can't afford him. Yeah. Lavia's sloppy second. I just want you to talk about Lavia a little bit because...
Some difference, though, isn't it? 100 Caicedo, 50 Lavia.
Well, some difference, too. These are, I know they're young players and Lavia's got the City pedigree and whatever.
Because normally when you have a plan A, plan B, the plan A and B are quite similar in terms of how they play and the price tag. You don't normally get a difference of 50 million. One's 100 and one's 50.
That is one of the weird things. But it just seems like there's a lot of money and a fair amount of risk for a guy who...
On Lavia.
He's had one season.
He's 19.
Yeah.
No, he's a good player. But, I mean, that is a lot of money for someone that is now got to wear either the Liverpool or Chelsea shirt. Caicedo's the man. I'll stand by it. He's the man. You pay the extra money, you get him in because he's a better player.
Manchester City still.
Potential is in Lavia, but there's potential in Caicedo.
Would it make you nervous that Manchester City still have a buyback option, or they had a buyback option. I think it's still active, might not be.
I think it is, yeah.
But they decided not to do that, right? Yeah. And I think it was $40 million they could buy Lavia back.
Yeah, and they've not gone for
it. It's like, are you guys seeing things that... You really have to back yourself if you're like, I'm seeing things that Pep doesn't see. Because with Gundogan gone, with Phillips having the kind of season he had, they bought Kovacic. Well, why wouldn't you want to bring this dude back? Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I know what you mean.
It just seems... I mean... I don't know. I'm a Lavia skeptic, let's say.
Yeah. So Zielinski, a big part of Napoli's success last season. Why is he being pushed out and who do they want to replace him?
Pushed out simply money. He's got a year left on his contract. They don't feel that they can reward him enough, give him the kind of money that he wants. He has interests from elsewhere. They're hoping it's going to be Saudi so that they can get a payday.
He was some player last season for the money.
He was tremendous. He was tremendous. Although, to be fair, you could argue he was their third best central midfielder. That's how good Sambo Guisa and Lavaca were. Yeah. They've got Cajus coming in. They're ready to move on. But they really like Gabri Vega, who, of course, in the first half of last season, everybody in Spain was drooling about. He has a release clause of $40 million. Napoli have offered $30 million. We asked Alex Kirkland of Fair, why... Where's all the Gabri Vega hype gone? He did not have a good second half of the season.
Right.
But Napoli hoped to get this across the line. And on paper, he seems like a natural replacement for Zielinski. Maybe more attacking than Zielinski.
Yeah.
Kyle Walker has a year left on his deal at City and was linked to Bayern, but that ship has sailed. It looks like he's re-upping for another season with Pep. Makes sense, Don?
100%. I think he's one of the players at Man City in that back line who I think is irreplaceable. He's quicker than most. One-on-one defending is incredible. No one really beats him. The performances that he put in against Vinny Jr. were just out of this world. And I think if you sold him, you'd be looking around Europe to try and buy the next Kyle Walker, which I'm not even sure is out there. If he is, he's going to cost you 100. That just seems to be the number these days. So why wouldn't you, if you're Pep, especially when you've lost in a summer where you've lost Mahrez and you've lost Gundogan, you don't want to see any more your first team squad 11 leave to make you weaker in a hurry.
I think this is a situation where with a year left, you know,
I think you give him a new deal.
You can give him a one-year extension if you want. He's 33, right? So
Pep's got, what, 2 years left? So he might not be there in 2 years.
I mean, but even if...
I think it's a no-brainer.
Even if he doesn't... Even if you just say, like, look, we can't give you the extension. We'll evaluate where you are at the end of the season. If I'm Kyle Walker, why would he want to leave?
No,
like,
I don't.
So I get, like, a two-year deal, a three-year deal?
No, I wouldn't.
Like, you know, you're there. You just won the treble. Enjoy it.
Yeah, totally true. Glasgow Rangers beat 10-man Servette 2-1 in the first leg of... qualify, but Gab, I want to ask you about the controversy surrounding the game. What happened?
Well, the guy who wasn't there, Gael Ondua. I don't like to bring politics into this podcast, but sometimes you have to because it's a question of football. So, Gael Ondua plays for Servette. He didn't, or he wasn't allowed. He wasn't given a visa to enter the United Kingdom.
Right.
And the reason he wasn't given a visa is that Ondua is from Cameroon, but he grew up partly in Russia. I believe he's also a Russian citizen. He's worn like little Russian flags on his socks before and stuff like that. And he was denied a visa on the basis, the same basis that, you know, some athletes are, you know, denied the right to play at Wimbledon if they're Russian, if they support, the, you know, Russia's efforts in the conflict and the war in Ukraine. Whatever your views are, I think this is very different from, you know, a tennis player deciding like, oh, I want to go to Wimbledon, an individual right. making a choice. This guy is an employee of Servette,
right?
He doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
He has to go play in the United Kingdom. Servette employed him. The fact that he has spoken out in favor of the country of which he's a citizen and which he grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly what he said. I'm hoping he didn't say, ooh, Ukraine needs to be wiped off the face of the earth. I mean, assuming he said something reasonable, like even if your country does something which most of the rest of the world regards as wrong, what do you want him to do? Like, I hate my country, not even his country because he's Cameroonian, but it's the country of which I have my other citizenship. I think this is really, really bad execution and really disappointed. I hope UEFA and Servette look into this. Obviously, it's not Rangers' fault. It's not the SFA's fault. Mm. This is a political thing, and they need to have rules where they say, guys, if people are under contract, you want to play in this competition, you need guarantees from your government that they will be granted visas to travel. Because this just isn't fair, I think.
Mm.
Ross Barkley's back in the Premier League. He's joining newly promoted Luton. Don, what does he have left in the tank?
Well, now it's all on him, isn't it? Now it's all on Ross Barkley to prove to everyone that he's still fit enough and he's still good enough because there's a talent in there. It's now he's... We've all been there as pros when you start coming down off the what you think is your best years and you start coming down off the cliff and you start to deteriorate and you start to get a little bit worse for whatever reason, injuries, fitness, motivation, whatever it might be. But now he's got to look in the mirror and go, he's got a chance now playing for a team in the Premier League, which is a great chance for him. Now when he's playing for Luton, who I've played for, and they're going to be up against it every single game, you would imagine. Let's see how much motivation he's got. Let's see how much he wants it because the talent is in there, but now it's on him. I think it's fair to say that. Back to Spurs. If Kane does move to Bayern, what's the succession plan?
Well, we touched upon this before. The succession plan, of course, I think is Richarlison through the middle.
See, I think it's Evan Ferguson.
Okay. Brighton. Leaving aside of Ferguson, if they can't afford Ferguson, they don't want to spend all this money in Ferguson.
Okay.
Brighton doesn't let him go. They've been linked with Gift Orban, who is who's at Genk. 21 years old, scored a lot of goals last season in the Belgian league. I think this has to be the approach. Try to get somebody who is cheaper as an alternative, but who's young and who can grow.
But is that not a red flag, though? So you say cheaper, so not as good.
Well, he's not going to be as good as Harry Kane.
No, but you can try and bridge the gap and find someone that's a little bit.
Ian Ferguson's not going to be as good as Harry Kane either. Not straight away, anyway. So I think you have to spend the money that you can afford to spend, you know. And Orban's gotten a lot of hype. He's bounced around a little bit, but he's still very, very young. And I think it makes sense to go for somebody like that who's can be different from the other forwards you have and who can give you something. Erik ten Hag has succeeded where Jose Mourinho and Louis van Gaal have failed. He got the club to agree to turn one of their hospitality lounges into a space for players to relax and prepare on match days.
Like this.
Rather than holing up in a hotel, which is what many clubs do. People don't know, like, on match day, you'll report, I don't know, what, 5 or 6 hours before kickoff. Yeah. You go to a hotel. You
guys sit around. Mooching around.
You sit on your hotel room. Bored. You play your PlayStation. You're bored. So he wants to have them mooch around and play their PlayStations, except...
Well, it won't be PlayStation.
Doing it inside Old Trafford, and he's gotten the club, and this is a club that...
I think it makes sense.
They like to squeeze as much money as they can at hospitality lounges and give up a hospitality lounge.
Well, weigh up that with hotel money, but I think didn't Jose have loads of problems and other managers in terms of getting in and to games, and Man United seem to be...
Traffic.
They seem to be late, which is bonkers. At home. Bonkers at home when the hotel was just around the corner. I do think it makes sense, though. I do think it makes sense from the manager and the player's point of view to be inside Old Trafford doing your technical work or, you know, work on the opposition strengths, weaknesses, etc. while you're in the building.
What did you guys do in those, like... Because you start getting ready and warm up like an hour and a half before, right? Yes, so what do you actually do, like 3 hours before kickoff?
Well, if you're staying in a hotel, it would be early morning walk. When I say early morning, it would be 10 a.m. walk. So right. You come downstairs, you'd have a walk, then you go back, have some breakfast, or sometimes breakfast before. But you go on a walk just to stretch the legs and just to, you know, get out of your bed instead of just lying still. Then you'd probably go back, have a shower, come down for, I don't know, 12 o'clock. Then you'd have a team meeting, which might last 45 minutes on the opposition, tactics. Some managers like to flip over the flip chart with the starting 11. Some managers never, you know, tell you the starting 11 on a Friday. Normally, sometimes it's a Saturday, etc. And then you've got to make your way to the game, which gets you there for, I don't know, 1:30 for a 3 o'clock kickoff. So it's all a little bit time consuming. So if you're there in the stadium, you can have a longer lie in. You can do what you like in terms of being relaxing with the family. You can even, judging by this, the family could be there with you. And then once you're in the bowels of the stadium, it's not that far to then go down to work. So it's the latest player to...
Eric.
Feels like it's a good move. Right, Kingsley Coman is the latest player to be linked with Saudi, with Mane gone. If Harry Kane
doesn't come,
will they be a little bit short in the forward department?
Yes, 100%. That you can't... If you don't get Kane or another striker, you cannot let Kingsley Coman go, because... Simple fact of the matter is you must play with a center forward, and your center forward options, as we know, the realistic ones are going to be converted wingers. I don't like Gnabry at center forward. No. I prefer Coleman at center forward. I think sadly they tried Sané there too. Didn't go great. I don't need to see Thomas Muller play center forward again. You have to come up with something. So I think it's essential that Coleman stays, even if, and maybe he'll want to stay if Kane comes. Obviously, if it's stupid money, and it helps fund the Kane transfer, then you got to think about it. FC Dallas defender Facundo Quiñon reportedly swapped shirts with Lionel Messi after the Leagues Cup game against Inter Miami.
Well played.
But then he says he was criticized for washing it.
Who?
Don, I know I get the joke. Haha, you shouldn't wash it. Messi sweat on it. Some sort of holy garb.
Ridiculous.
It'd be kind of gross. Yeah, I'm assuming you've washed every jersey you've swapped, right?
No. I've got a Manuel Petit shirt that I've had in my garage that's got dirt all over it from 25 years ago. It's fine. It doesn't stink.
Do you know?
Just air it.
What, Emmanuel Petit's sweat doesn't stink?
Well, no, you just put it in the garden, stick it on a hanger, let some air get to it. It doesn't stink. Hang it up.
There's going to be germs in the dirt
no
and everything.
Germs in it, man.
You've got small children running around. Disgusting.
Germs in it, man.
Disgusting.
It's disgusting that he's getting criticised for washing it, if that's real, if that's even a real story. Oh, dear me. Anyway, Cristiano Ronaldo scored the penalty that gave Al Nassr a 1-0 win over Rax Al Shorta in the Arab Champions Cup. Now they face Al Hilal, Kalidou Koulibaly, in the final. Would it be their first trophy with Al Nassr?
It would be Cristiano's first trophy since moving to Saudi, except for the trophy that he was already given as the competition's top scorer, apparently, which I thought was weird, given there's a game to go. But
just giving them trophies, aren't they?
Yeah, look, I mean, we had to kind of, you notice what we did there? The obligatory mention of Messi and Cristiano, yeah. Because what you have to do every single
together.
Show. Don, that brings us to an end.
Amazing.
But so thanks for stepping in, trying to fill Jules's tiny, tiny little shoes. He's got little feet.
Tiny.
I'm going to be back on Monday. Until then, love the game. Love you, David. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.